specialists. Email address, Subaru@WardenMartin.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. And we're also pleased to welcome back to the program Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on the, what do we do this, the second Tuesday, the third Tuesday, something like that. It's a Tuesday. She's she stops by here. Some kind of Tuesday.
Stop by when I'm in the area.
And, well, of course, we're always pleased that she is here. And the idea is it's your opportunity to call in and ask questions about things that grow in the home landscape. Could be trees and shrubs, could be flowering plants, could be vegetables, could be grass. We also can take questions about houseplants, if that's what's on your mind. Any and all of that, if you're having a problem and you need some help, you can call in and give us the best description of the problem. Sandy can see if she can help you out. Maybe still people at this point are thinking about planting things and they're looking for suggestions. Any and all of that is certainly welcome. And I know that she will do her very best to help you out. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. It's good anywhere that you can hear us. 800-222-9455. Otherwise, 333-9455. At any point here, you can give us a call. Happy to have you with us once again.
Good morning. And I'm glad it's on much better circumstances. Although it makes my job easy because I just say, well, you know, it's the drought. That's why your plants are dying. It's real easy. So I'm glad we've gotten some rain.
Well, certainly because it was so dry May and June. And even the beginning part of July, we did get a little bit, but we really were down, and you could tell that stuff was stressed, and people, if they wanted to keep their plants alive, mm-hmm. were watering. Mm-hmm. And now it looks like, at least here, I think this morning, our meteorologist said we'd gotten maybe a little bit more than an inch, and maybe we'll get some more. So that's really,
yay.
That's really good. And it's a nice, steady, soaking rain, which is better than you get 2 inches in
right.
an hour or something.
Right. Then, especially how dry it is because, it kind of gets that little crust over the top. We get really torrential downpours and it all kind of rolls off. So this is a wonderful rain if we had to pick one.
Right. All right. Well, we have some people lined up and ready to go. In fact, the lines are full. So I guess we'll start right in here on line number one.
Hello?
Yes.
Mike, I have two questions and one is about peonies and one's about cherry trees. I have some peonies. And they did strange things this summer, or this spring. I got some fall blooms, a few. Then I got some big buds, maybe an inch in diameter, which mm-hmm. never opened. Mm-hmm. Then I got some little teeny ones, like, 1/8 to 1/4 inch that never did anything more. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Why does it do that?
Yeah. Actually, one of the things that's going on is peonies do get a fungal disease, and it's real common. And you're fortunate you haven't seen it before, and it does cause the buds just to sort of abort. They just basically fungus hits them, and they die, and so they never open. And so a lot of it has to do with the weather conditions that are going on at the time. And so most of the time, we don't recommend that you have to do a fungicide, but if you find that it happens year after year after year, then there's some concerns.
That I'm aware of.
Yeah, probably your biggest thing is I'd get that stuff out. Anything that looks like the old buds and all that stuff, I'd remove that now and get it out of there. Because the fungus will overwinter even on that stuff. So this fall, as the foliage dies down naturally, make sure you get that out of there.
Yeah, because I've always done that because you
right,
said to do
right,
that.
Right,
yeah.
right, right. So unfortunately, it just happened to be one of those conditions. If there's any way you can improve air circulation, those kind of things will help. But I have a feeling it just happened to be the weather conditions were just right that you had a problem with it.
So will this continue to happen then next year?
It really shouldn't. Now, sometimes people do say that they seem to have a problem year after year after year, and it does seem to be probably, depending on how wet our springs are, depending on those kind of conditions, if it's cool, moist spring, then a lot of times we will get it, or if they have an area where there's a lot of trees around that have poor air circulation. So it would require a fungicide spray if you truly wanted to prevent it. So
what is the fungicide spray?
Actually, there's several of them out there. Dakinil would be one of those, one of the name brands that are out there. But it's generally we don't recommend it because generally it doesn't happen year after year after year. But if you do find that, usually sanitation is enough to take care of it.
Okay. Well, my next question is about cherry trees, and I know someone who has some cherry trees, mm-hmm. and I was just curious because it seems like some of the trees have cherries and some have nothing. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, are there male and female cherry trees?
No. And actually, most of the cherry trees are going to be self-fertile, so you don't even need another one. I found this year, I have sour cherries, and I had a wonderful crop last year. I had virtually none this year. And it's very, very disconcerting when you're so excited about it. But what I'm guessing happened is that for some reason or other, there was very, very poor pollination, and that's usually what occurs. Either it's too dry, or for some reason the bees aren't active, or there aren't any bees. Somehow we still require those pollinators out there. So for some reason or another, they just didn't get pollinated well. So it's unfortunate.
One tree was just a bloom with cherries.
Yeah, and I had plenty of flowers.
One right next to it had nothing.
Yeah, yeah. So there's something going on there where they just didn't get pollinated. Well, and it's another thing that it shouldn't happen year after year after year. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I was just curious. Yeah. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks for the call. Let's go to next, Aurora, on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Is that me?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Hi.
Well, it's just great to talk to you. But could you tell me again, I asked you the last time we spoke, what was something good for hostas to make them, what fertilizer to use, and you told me, and I don't recall the numbers.
Mm-hmm. Well, usually on plants where we're just looking for the foliage, where we're not necessarily looking for a lot of flowers on
them. Well, I am.
Oh, you really want, okay, that's fine. Actually, if you want to go that route, that's fine. You can use anything from, and actually on hostas, you could just use a complete fertilizer like a 10-10-10 or something along those lines, and they'd be quite happy. Most of the time.
Because the numbers you told me, I could not find.
Well, you know, it may be 12-12-12. I think it's more of looking at the ratio.
It's something like 4-5-4 or 4-5-10.
And that's good. If it says it's for foliage plants or something along those lines, then I think you'll be just fine. And it depends a lot on the manufacturer and what the numbers are. So don't worry too much if the numbers aren't exactly what I tell you. But it should be kind of in that ratio, whether it's pretty much the same for each nutrient.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually works out pretty well.
Why didn't my daughter's bridal bush bloom on time?
On time or at all?
Well, it finally bloomed very late. Would not enough sun would be the problem. She was so disappointed.
Yeah, as long as it bloomed okay, sometimes it just happens to do with the spring. Now, for a lot of things that I saw, everything was sort of sped up because it was fairly warm, and I found a lot of things that were blooming early. So in that particular case with this one, I'm not sure exactly what's going on, but if it bloomed at all, then at least she's not doing anything as far as pruning at the wrong time or any of those things.
No, she wasn't.
Certainly, if it's getting a lot of shade, there might be some issues there where it might bloom a little bit later, but usually that has a whole lot to do, you know, when they're blooming is into how warm it is.
Oh, well, mine was blooming beautifully, and she was very unhappy that mm-hmm. hers wasn't.
Was she in a cooler area for some reason that it stayed cooler longer?
She's just a half an hour away.
Oh. Hmm.
Then, you know, this is my second year, and this is a poor year to compare of trying to have a butterfly garden.
Mm-hmm.
What is our census of butterflies? Is it very low anyway?
Pretty much everybody that I've talked to and I noticed around my yard is that it's been very low this year. I've seen very few butterflies compared to what I have in the past, and lots of theories being thrown around out there, and I'm not sure if anybody's really come up with a reason for that. There seems to be certain ones. Some folks said that they were seeing an awful lot of fritillarias, but even like painted ladies. Normally I see, you know, thousands of painted ladies, and I'm seeing very few of those and just a couple swallowtails. So it's really down this year, and I'm not sure exactly what's going on there. So don't be discouraged, in other words, if you're not getting a lot this year.
Well, I'm still putting the I still have the garden, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm still trying. My Monarda is doing beautifully.
Oh, that's great.
You know, it's a prairie plant, of
mm-hmm.
course.
Sure.
It's doing beautifully in this weather. But I have what I would call two hybrids. Off to the right of the plant, there are three Monardas that are a deep red.
Mm-hmm.
And the plant, of course, is purple. Are these hybrids?
They were all supposed to be the prairie plant, or?
Yeah, they are a Monarda, but they are red.
Oh, well, there are many cultivars of Monardas, of the bee bombs, and some of them are red. Certainly some of them are red. So you may just have ended up with one of the cultivars.
I never had it before. Never had these red Monardas. I don't know where they came from.
Huh. That's kind of odd. I haven't seen them reseed before, so I'm not sure why you'd be getting the differences there.
No,
but
it's delightful, but I...
one of those good weird things.
And one last question. I put zinnias in. And the next day, and the next day, and the next day, something ate them down.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't touch my snapdragons or anything else, but it ate the zinnias down.
Yeah, I think first culprit would probably be rabbits that we would think of, because they're certainly very good at that.
Like rabbit bites. No, it was, you know, they ate around the leaf and kept eating around.
Okay, so, and you didn't see any kind of insect or slugs or anything like that? That might have been a...
Well, you know, I didn't get that energetic to look at. they were so poor, I just thought, well, they're gone, they're struggling.
Yeah, well, certainly slugs would be another one, and since they work at night, sometimes we don't notice them as much.
Oh, so. Yes, but the snapdragons look beautiful.
Oh, that's great.
So this is... Take care. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. All right. Thanks for the call. We have a little area in our yard, a sort of a shady area, where we decided we'd like to try and see if we can get some ferns started. So mm-hmm. we put in a couple different kinds of ferns, and one of them was a really nice Japanese painted fern. It was a beautiful plant. It was doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
So the other day, I come home for lunch, and I'm just kind of walking around looking at things, and I realize the painted fern is gone, completely gone. And I'm thinking, did someone steal it?
Was there a little hole there?
What happened? Then I started to sort of dig around to investigate, and I found out that, in fact, someone, and
uh-oh,
I think I know who, came along and ate it, and they mowed it down right to the ground, because the little sticks from where the plant was.
Yeah.
And so now I'm hoping that, well, if the, you know, maybe it will come back.
Yeah.
I mean, if the roots are still,
Okay. And if it's been there for a couple of years, it probably will come back.
Yeah. Well, it was brand new in the ground. It had been there for a couple months.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't give up on it. I'd still water it if we obviously get back into a dry spell, but I'd still water it and don't give up on it.
It was very strange because also
that
there
is,
are some
all of
other
a sudden,
plants in this area that were okay. And I'm just, and I was completely, I thought, what? Where did aliens come and take it?
They came down just for my
Japanese painted fern. And they have long ears and little wiggly noses.
Flappy.
Yeah, it's Andy Mason as our guest. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care. And if you have questions, give us a call. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next up is a caller in Paxton, line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I want to know what to do about the Japanese beetles that won't leave my peaches alone.
Yeah, good question. You know, and I wish I had a really good answer for Japanese beetles, because we're all suffering from their problems, or pretty much all of us are suffering from their problems. And at this point, I assume they're ready to be picked, or almost ready to be picked.
They're getting close, but some of them are still pretty hard.
Yeah. Is this a very big tree?
I guess they're what you could consider dwarf trees, and I could get to the top maybe with a stepladder.
Yeah. Because, you know, it gets harder and harder to use anything, obviously, if we're ready to harvest them. And I don't, depending on how many Japanese beetles are on there right now, one of the things I found that's effective, especially for some of the fruit and vegetable crops, if the plants are not too big, is to use the floating row covers. I don't know if you're familiar with those.
Yeah.
They look like those big white spunbond.
But if they're already...
You'd have to shake them off. And, you know, Japanese beetles, when they get disturbed, they tend to fall to the ground.
Yeah.
So you'd have to spend some time sort of knocking them off and doing some of that, because obviously you don't want to just keep them in there. But it would certainly protect some of the peaches themselves and that kind of thing. I have actually seen people cover individual peaches, believe it or not, just to keep them off of those peaches so that they can at least ripen that way. And I know that's very time consuming, but it certainly would be one way to take care of that problem.
Could I try spraying soapy water? Like dish soap in a hose sprayer?
You might knock a few off that way, but, you know, they come back so quickly that I'm not sure how well that's going to help for you. And most of the time, the soaps aren't particularly good on those hard-bodied insects, because they tend to be fairly protected from really soaps and those kinds of things. So that gets a lot. You certainly could use a high stream of water,
and that'd probably just as effective.
Is to actually just to hit them with water and try to get them off that way.
Do you think the rain is knocking them off today or
They certainly aren't as active when it's raining, so I guess that's the good news. They generally don't feed as much. They generally don't fly around as much. So I guess there's some good news to that, is that the ones that are on there are probably the ones that you're not going to get new ones necessarily today.
Okay.
So there might be some things you could do now to sort of take care of the ones you have now.
Okay.
It's tough. I know it's a tough problem. I wish we had a good answer.
Mm-hmm. Is anybody working on any enemies for them?
You know, I think the one thing is, I guess, you know, even though Japanese beetles, you know, we hate them, they're fairly new to Illinois compared to what, you know, New York and a lot of the eastern states have certainly had them for a very long time, much longer than us, since about the 1930s or so. So they've certainly been around for a while. And I guess that's what I'm saying. They haven't even quite figured out anything for those. There is milky spore, which is one of the bacterial type agents that can be used against the grubs, and it's fairly effective against the grubs. But unfortunately, unless everybody does it, the Japanese beetles fly so much. That's one of the big problems, is that they fly for miles and can fly for miles. And that's one of the big problems with them, is that they don't stick around in one area.
Okay. So, well, thank you.
We'll hope somebody will come up with something good.
Okay. All right. We'll continue here and talk next with someone in Chicago. This is line number one. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Yeah. Yes.
I bought an aloe vera. Also on the tag, it said medicine plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a foot high, not healthy looking, and a very tiny styrofoam cup that was dripping with water. I'd like to transplant that. What kind of soil would I use?
Really, with those guys, just any kind of really well-drained soil. And you could actually get mixes that say they're for cactuses and stuff, which would be just fine. Or I would, even a soilless mix would be fine. Something that you know is going to drain well. And they also seem to do better if you can put them in like a clay pot or something that has a lot of porosity to it.
How about perlite or vermiculite or beach sand? Would that be all right?
Well, beach sand is actually a little bit too fine, depending on the beach you have. But usually construction grades, if you're going to use sand, I'd use construction grade, the stuff that's bigger, if you're going to go that route. And if you're going to use sand, I'd use a lot of it, as in more than half of the soil mix should be sand. And you can certainly make your own. You could certainly do that.
I see. I never heard that called a medicine plant.
Well, aloe is one of those things that sometimes people certainly do use for burns and cuts, and has been used for that for a very long time, and people have found it to be effective.
All right, then. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right. Thank you. And let's go next to someone listening in Piatt County. This is line number four.
Good
Hello?
Morning.
Yes.
I have a question. I read a magazine article about bearded irises, and they recommended cutting them off. So I cut them off when it was really hot. And then I noticed that some of the leaves had a long brown stripe on it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I thought, well, it's just because it's so dry. But the article in the magazine said that that could be a sign of iris borer. And it wouldn't be the whole iris, you know, fan of leaves. It'd be like one leaf would have, mm-hmm. you know, the side of it brown all the way down the leaf. And I didn't know, short of pulling up the rhizome and looking at it, I just went ahead and cut them off and, you know, got rid of the
mm-hmm,
leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that the brown leaves were iris borers or just dry?
Well, could be. I guess if you're seeing an actual streak, then we might wonder about insects or even disease problems.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'll get that. So I'd kind of wonder, usually if it's drought, you'll see the tips will brown
mm-hmm.
or the sides will brown. Mm-hmm. And that would be probably more common of what we'd see with drought injury.
Mm-hmm.
But irises take a lot of, they're very tough, and they'll take a lot of dry before they really suffer from dryness.
Well, that's what I thought.
Cemeteries
and things.
They're pretty tough plants. So I would kind of wonder about iris borer, but what you could do is that, you know, usually the rhizome itself is pretty close to the surface, or actually
mm-hmm.
right there on top of the surface, and you can tell real easily. Usually the fan itself will die if you're really getting iris borer, because they move from the fan down into the rhizome.
Okay.
And you can actually stick your thumb into a few of the rhizomes and see if they're firm.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're not, what will happen, if the borer's in there, what will happen is you'll just punch right through it, because they generally leave the skin on, kind of, but then eat out the interior of the rhizome. So you'll find out real quick just by doing a little investigation.
Okay. And should I fertilize them then for fall, or just leave them alone? And
you know, really with irises, they don't really need a whole lot of fertilization. And actually, I think they're one of those that's probably a little bit better if they're not.
Yeah, they'd probably like to be left alone.
Yeah, they are tough plants. I had one, you know, I was redoing some irises one time, and I put them on top of my, you know, put some on a compost pile, and they lived through the winter on top of the compost pile and started growing on top of the compost pile. Tough plants. They are tough cookies.
Have you tried the reblooming ones?
Yes, I have, and I love them.
Okay.
Go for it. If you haven't gotten a rebloomer yet, they're just beautiful.
Okay.
And there's nothing nicer than seeing irises in September.
Yes, I was thinking that. Thanks so much.
Very good. Thank you. Well, I've had the same problem as this caller. I am almost 100% sure I have a small standard virus that I had iris borer earlier this spring. And I wasn't really quite sure what to do, whether just to rip the things out of the ground or just to leave them and see what happened. And I decided to leave them and see what happened. So clearly some parts of the plants have died and others are still green and seem to be okay. And I guess I'm not really sure what to do now.
Really, your best bet, and grandmas have done this for a long time, and I never knew why grandmas did these kinds of things, but they always would prune them down, would cut them down in the fall, you know, cut those old leaves off in the fall. And I was never quite sure, you know, it just seemed like a grandma thing, but come to find out what they're really doing, it was trying to prevent the iris borer, because what will happen is it's a moth, and she'll actually lay her eggs in the fall on those leaves. And so if you get rid of those leaves, you're actually getting rid of the eggs. So in the fall, that's a really good thing to just get used to doing, just taking off those old leaves and getting them out of there. Don't just lay them over somewhere. You know, either, you know, bury them or put them in the compost pile and bury them in the compost pile, something. And that will help to get rid of the eggs. And then hopefully next year, then you wouldn't have any borers.
Yeah, okay. And cut them just right down to the ground?
Pretty much. I mean, you're within, an inch or two. I mean, you're not really getting, because, you know, it gets kind of hard. But you're really cutting them down fairly hard and get rid of that foliage. So just good. It's another one of those things. Good sanitation is a good prevention.
Yeah. And in the meantime, nothing in particular you can do between now and the time that things pretty much go dormant then.
You know, it'd be one of those things if you want to go ahead and dig them up, you know, at this point, and it wouldn't be a bad idea if you know you have iris borers, sort of dig them up, get rid of those that are obviously infested because they get a bacterial soft rot that's really kind of gross and, you know, and it'd be a good way to sort of revamp the whole planting. So digging them up, that would be a good thing, and getting rid of the old ones, replanting new ones, and then remembering to do that this fall.
I think one of the first things that tipped me off was the way that they smelled.
Yeah. It's that bacteria. Oh, isn't it gross?
Ooh, yeah.
It's like rotten onions. Have you ever had an onion go bad? It's that kind of the smelly,
slimy. I was thinking
that
it was almost like rotten fish. I got a sort of a,
So that should tell everybody exactly what that smell
People
is.
Are not, in droves, they're heading for the radio. They're turning it off, saying, look,
it's
okay,
not lunchtime.
You guys, let's have some, I'm going to turn on the FM. Let's have some music. Let's go to next caller, Champagne. Line two, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a couple questions about potted jasmine plants. My mother-in-law keeps a large number of jasmine plants in pots, and we put them out during the summer outside. They do very well. We bring them in the winter, keep them in the basement under some supplemental lighting, and what happens is they get woolly aphids. And then as the winter progresses, they get worse and worse, and by the time we bring them out again in the spring, pretty much have to cut them back. Then they regrow again, but I'm wondering if there's a way we can prevent that by treating the soil or something when we bring the pots in.
Yeah, I think probably your best bet is to use something like insecticidal soap. And when you bring them in, I would go ahead and spray them with insecticidal soap. I'd probably go ahead, I don't know, do you replant them at all when you bring them in, or do you just...
Not usually. And I mean, you know, there's so many
it's hard.
That it's
kind of hard
to repot all of them.
Right. But it might be something where you might want to actually drench the soil several times, you know, let them drain out and really drench the soil, just for other things.
Soap,
no, I would just use plain old water. You're just trying to sort of flush anything else out that might be in there. But using insecticidal soap does a pretty good job of taking care of a lot of those soft-bodied insects that you're going to get naturally. We just always seem to get them on those plants that we bring in. So things like spider mites and scale and all those other things that may come in. And you may have to do it, you know, throughout the season, obviously. You know, just keep an eye on them. As soon as you see it, you know, jump on it and make sure you spray them down with insecticidal soap and just do that through the winter.
Okay. And the other question I had is that we've noticed on some of them this time of year, sort of a mottled yellowing on some of the leaves. And I was wondering if that's some type of viral thing or if it's a nutritional thing.
Yeah, I'm not aware of a virus on jasmine, but you know, it's not a crop that we grow a lot around here. So there could very well be a virus on them. Do they still seem like they grow well and doesn't seem to?
Yeah, pretty much so. I mean, my experience has usually been that if it's insect damage, you can sort of see more of a more evidence of the insect mm-hmm. damage or more biting mm-hmm. or something like that. And mm-hmm. The leaf itself uniformly still has the nice sort of waxy coating on it. It's just that it's mottled.
Mottled as in you get these yellow kind of streaks kind of here and there?
Kind of patches. Patches. Not like streaks, but more like patches of yellowing. And that's not the whole leaf being yellow, too, which was what made me think more of a virus.
Yeah, it would be worth investigating simply because viruses can certainly transfer from plant to plant. Mm-hmm. I mean, depending on the insects and depending on if you're doing any pruning, you can actually transfer. Mm-hmm. So it'd be
with the pruners themselves. Oh,
you bet. So if you're pruning, you actually can be moving the virus around. So it'd be worth investigating. Are you here in Champaign-Urbana? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. What you might want to do is maybe take a sample to the U of I Plant Clinic there on St. Mary's Road and really find out for sure. And simply because with these other jasmines, if you have a lot of them, it's not something you want to transfer.
Right. Yes, exactly.
So it does sound more like either fungal, virus, something else going on besides just a nutrient deficiency.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for the call. Back here to line number one. This is someone in Urbana. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm calling about hydrangea.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, I've noticed plants with both pink and blue colored flowers, and I wonder if this is a new variety or a new technique for growing.
You know, it may be. I have one called Endless Summer that is one of the newer ones, and it blooms on old wood and new wood both, which is nice. And it does have a tendency that some of the flowers tend to be a little bluer and some of them tend to be a little bit pinker. I think some of it has to do with the age of the flower. They seem to sort of fade away, and they get kind of these different colors on them. But it also happens to do certainly with this, with the, you know, we're supposed to be putting aluminum sulfate on them in order to get them to turn blue. So it maybe just happened on where they are, the soil conditions, the amount of aluminum available, those kinds of things.
I ask because I know borage flowers, those small, do change color with age of flower.
Yeah, and you may very well be seeing the same thing with hydrangeas, I'm betting.
And it's likely to be one of the newer varieties.
Right, right.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks. I think we talked about this hydrangea that we have last time we were here because I said I thought for sure it was a plant that's been in the ground for several years, and this is the first time it's flowered. And I said I thought for sure that I remembered it having a different color flower.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It came up, it looked like it was going to be white. And actually what happened was as the flower sort of developed, it actually turned pink, sort of a light pink. And then we have this conversation about how well, but if you put a particular kind of thing on the soil, on the plant, you can actually get them to turn blue.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that's what you want, I guess I figured, well, they're okay pink.
Pink is an okay color.
Pink is fine. I don't need to be blue. But I was really impressed, and I noticed as I was walking down in, you know, making my walk to work, somebody down a couple of blocks down the street from us has a hydrangea that does have really beautiful blue flowers. So yeah. they must be doing whatever, unless it just does that all by itself.
Now, I have a feeling, around here, our soils just aren't acidic enough, for one thing, and then generally it's at the availability of aluminum. So normally it's something that you have to be applying. So more than likely they're doing what they need to do to get them blue.
Okay. We'll be past the midpoint here. Sandy Mason is with us. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she's here once a month on a Tuesday, and we talk about lawn and garden care. If you have questions, call us 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. The next caller in line is in Champaign in line number 3. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have two questions, too. One about peach trees. I wanted to know if it's a bad sign if your tree bears a couple of potential peaches and they just don't do anything. They just kind of like fall off.
Mm-hmm. Is this a new tree, young tree?
Yeah, it's a young tree, and it's doing really well as far as that goes, but we thought it was actually bear some fruit, and it doesn't look like it.
They're just going to fall off, or they didn't develop
until? It was just these two, and I haven't seen any more come back.
Yeah. Well, you know, it takes a while for these young trees, and usually by the time you get around to maybe the third or fourth year, you should start seeing something going on there.
Okay, all right.
What sometimes will happen is that peaches are one of those that do need some pruning. Normally we'd prune them in the springtime, but they do need a certain amount of pruning, because if they get too many peaches, you're not at that point, but if they get too many peaches, sometimes we will see some of the peaches just naturally drop off because there's too many of them. Now, you didn't have that problem, but certainly other people might see that. So I would just give it some time.
Okay. And another one about roses. I don't know if they were... or aphids or mice, but some kind of insect kind of like did a job on my roses this year. I mean, they bloomed and everything, but the leaves are all eaten up. And I just wanted to know if there is something I can do, pre-treat or something before that might happen next year.
And it wasn't Japanese beetles, because you would have seen
them. I know
them. Those, you know, we all know those. No, there actually is something called a rose slug. They call it a rose slug, but it really isn't a slug. It's actually a sawfly. But beyond that, they're little bitty tiny, like little caterpillar-like guys. And they just chew roses down. And they're so tiny that a lot of times we miss them. And a lot of times they're on the undersides of the leaves chewing. And so we just kind of notice, wow, something's chewing on there, but you don't even see them. So it'd be one of those things that when you start seeing that, you certainly could use any number of insecticides would work on them. There actually are some rose products that have an insecticide and fungicide both in them. So if you find you're going to need to do that periodically, that's sometimes a good product. Then you don't have to spray more than once. But any of those would work out just fine, or even, you know, things like Seven and some of those will actually do just fine. Usually we see it probably maybe some earlier in the season or so, and usually we don't see quite so many. Then the Japanese beetles get them. So,
this didn't seem to happen last year, if I'm remembering correctly, to this extent, but whatever it is, they like roses.
So. Yep. So as soon as you start seeing that little bit of damage, or if you want, as the leaves first start to come out, you may want to use some of the rose sprays.
Okay.
All right, good luck.
Thank you. So go to Charleston, line number 4. Hello.
Hi. I'm trying to get a new lawn established, and this is a bad year for it.
I was about to say that. Aren't you lucky?
One question I have is, how long do I need to water it to keep it from drying out and dying? At some point, I realize it'll get to the point where it's established enough that it'll just go dormant. When can I expect that to happen?
Now, when did you start this?
First week of May, we finally got it planted.
Okay. And then did it have some time period there? It seems like May was awfully dry, too. So it really didn't have a time period where it really could flourish too much. You've had to do supplemental watering pretty much the whole time.
We have watered it constantly.
Yeah.
And the bluegrass is doing pretty well. The roots are down 3 or 4 inches now.
Okay. Probably the biggest thing when you start getting a lawn is to water thoroughly, but maybe less frequently.
Yeah, we've been doing that.
Yeah. So you're not sprinkling every day?
No.
Okay.
More like an inch a week or so.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And generally, that's enough to keep it green. Now, when we start cutting back a little bit more than that, then that's when they'll still be alive, but they won't green. So if you're pretty confident that the roots are fairly well established, and you could actually cut out a plug or something to see that, you might be able to cut back a little bit on that. But with this being a brand new lawn, it's going to be very susceptible to drought injury much more. So I hate to say this, but I'm guessing that this whole year, you're really going to have to make sure that you add some supplemental watering to it.
Okay, that's what I'll do.
Yeah,
so
unfortunately.
A lot of weeds came up, weedy grasses, and I was just wondering what my options are there. Will they die out over the winter and let the bluegrass take over?
It kind of depends on, is it crabgrass or can you tell?
Crabgrass and goosegrass and some other kind that I'm not sure.
Okay, things like crabgrass and stuff, you can take care of that next spring by using a pre-emergent crabgrass control. So I wouldn't be too concerned right now. You can take care of that next year and get a pretty good control for those annual grassy weeds.
Okay.
So I wouldn't worry too much about that right now.
Yeah, the only herbicides I've seen are based on arsenic, and I'm not really too crazy about spreading arsenic all over my yard.
I don't know what products those are. But yeah, I would be more concerned about doing something next spring on that and just really try to get the lawn established this year.
Okay.
Good luck.
Anyone working on a glyphosate-resistant lawn grass?
Actually, they probably are, and now that you say that, I think I have seen that somebody's looking at that Roundup-resistant grass.
Just want to spray the whole thing.
Just want to get rid of everything. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, those grassy weeds are so similar to bluegrass, it's very tough to get something that's going to select them out.
Okay. Thanks.
All mm-hmm. right. Thanks. If someone could do that, they could invent a Roundup-resistant lawn grass. They'd make a bazillion
dollars. It's probably in the works, I imagine.
All right. Let's go here to Muhammad, line number two. Hello.
Hi. We live in a foresty area, and some of the forest is on slopes and some on flatter land. I'm trying to at least clean out the sticker bushes and some other undesirables. I would like to know if there is anything that can be planted that will kind of thrive. There are deer there. There are rabbits there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. Right off the top of my head, it'd have to be something that they do. There are lists for deer-resistant plants.
Yeah, one of the top ones on there was a juga, and they came and ate it all.
I shouldn't laugh, but I know that they just don't read the books like they're supposed to. Yeah, and unfortunately, it depends. You must have a high population or a fairly high population of them.
At times, yes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the one thing that I had, and I don't know whether this works well for you, and this may not be the route you want to go, but I saw somebody do a really an interesting thing in Monticello. One of the gardeners actually lives in a forested area, and they built using yews, and although deer will eat yews, but they used deer, and they used yews as well as some fencing, and actually made this kind of barricade, because, you know, deer like to walk through certain areas. They don't, although they will jump, they don't, that's not their first preference. And they really said they get very few deer in their yard, even though they live right next to a forested area. And it makes a nice backdrop for the garden. I know this isn't really what your question was, but sometimes if we'd sort of look at it in a different direction, sometimes it helps. So I don't know if that's doable for you, but I would just think about trying some of the other plants. Maybe some of the wildflowers. I know there's some issues there. They'll still eat some of those, but trying to get maybe some of those established. Sometimes if you get rid of all the sticker stuff, the other stuff will come back.
The violets seem to be pretty good.
Violets? Well, it's something. They make a nice ground cover.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's another difficult question.
Okay.
All right.
Good
thank
luck.
Thank you. We'll go next to Sydney, line three. Hello.
Oh, hi. Hi, Sandy. This is your friend Dennis. And I've got a comment today. I'm very alarmed at what I've been seeing with the zero-turn radius mowers. Mm-hmm. Most people know that they tear the turf up, but I've seen beautiful evergreens disfigured. My guess is the deck doesn't stick out. So when they trim, they rub the new growth on the evergreens. And I've had new jobs that I've installed where they've destroyed the evergreens, and I've noticed after that, looking around, and there's some wonderful evergreens that have just been destroyed, and my guess is that when the new growth comes out, that constant rubbing mm-hmm. of the mower mm-hmm. wheels. So I just thought I'd share that with the audience, because normally you can plead with them not to do that.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a really good point, you know, as we use different, and I've seen people kill trees using weed whackers too, because people don't think on those young trees, they don't think it's a big deal, but you can absolutely kill a tree using those too. So maybe the bottom line is that people need to mulch. If people would, you know, maybe do some more mulching and actually get rid of some of that turf underneath some of these plants and give them some space, maybe that's one thing that would help. But that's a, I never thought about that, but that's really a good comment.
Well, I've caught them in the act that I could. I didn't know what was going on until then, but so I just passed that along.
Oh, thanks.
Enjoy mm-hmm. your program.
All right. Thanks. Well, thanks for the call. Mm-hmm. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. That's our monthly show on lawn and garden care. If you have questions, give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We go back to Aurora here for line number one. Hello.
Yes, I wondered what bulbs that bloomed in the spring, like Asiatic lilies and Easter lily bulbs, plants, when can we dig up the bulbs and move them to a better place or another place, because they've gotten mm-hmm. so, there are so many in one spot and I want mm-hmm. to transplant.
You could certainly do that usually I'd probably wait till September or so. And then move them at that time.
I'm so busy in September. September, though.
Well, maybe October. You could probably do it in October. Well, it's just so dry, and those guys are a little bit more susceptible to dryness than, say, daffodils and some of those. So I'd be a little bit concerned about that. You know, it might be if you have, if they're like tiger lilies and some of those, they're pretty tough and seem to survive
that.
But
Asiatic lilies and Easter lily bulbs.
I'd give it some time, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm glad I asked. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you. Back to Bloomington, Illinois. This is the next caller here, line number 4. Hello.
Hi, this is Bob in Bloomington. I'm wondering if you can give me any tips on how to keep squirrels out of my peach tree. Last year, I lost virtually every peach to the squirrels, and it's getting as frustrating as dealing with rabbits. Mm-hmm. I'm driving my car. Let me hang up, and I'll listen to your answer. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
Seems to be wildlife days.
What you got to do is you got to build yourself a real big cage.
Well, you know, we say that, but you know, unfortunately, with those guys, you can't really do a fence. You can't really, you know, unless there's some way, you know, if they're jumping from trees onto the peach tree, you know, sometimes there's some things you can do about trimming trees around it and then trying to do some other things. But I think, unfortunately, for a lot of these, that is going to be your best bet is to use netting or something along those lines to actually just physically keep them out. I don't know of any sprays or anything like that that's going to keep the squirrels off of them.
Yeah, I think all you can do is the best barrier that you can put up. I think that's probably
it. Yeah, and it may be worth it, you know, and it could be just a temporary thing that you put up while you're harvesting kind of thing or ready to harvest, and so to actually just put up a structure of some kind and go from there. I know it sounds like a lot, but, you know, peaches are worth it.
Yeah, okay. Hope that helps.
it's a tough problem. They're like raccoons. They're tough to keep them out of anything because they can climb fences
and they'll
that
eat
other
the peaches
stuff.
Before they get ripe.
Yes, they do, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah. They don't even wait.
They'll even sit there in front of you and do it. And while you're watching. They taunt you.
Do they really?
Yeah.
They probably do. Yeah. But it'd be another one of those. I've seen people just individually cover the peaches, which is, I know, is a pain, but...
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think it's best we can do. Let's go to Urbana next, line number 2. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
I have a question, another hydrangea question. When I moved into this house, the former owners had planted a hydrangea bush on the south side wall, so I didn't think it was going to live. But it does. It lives every year, and it blooms. But what happens is a white hydrangea flower, but about this time every year, the flowers turn like a green color. So I'm wondering if there's anything I should put on it to make them stay white.
They're probably just aging, is my guess.
Oh.
That's just as the flower ages, it kind of can get that green look to it. So I'm not sure there's anything you can do too much about. I mean, they're white for a while. Is that the way I understand it?
They stay white, like when it first blooms,
mm-hmm.
they'll stay bright, beautiful white. And then right about now, I came in yesterday from, you know, I was driving around, pulled into the driveway because that's where the bush is. And I noticed all the white flowers are now looking very green.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just aging.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's too much you can do about that. I think that's just part of what they do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they either cut them off or just look at green.
Yeah, a lot of times people actually like, you know, as they age, they kind of even get a little brownish, which sometimes people actually even like through the season. So kind of depends on how well you like it.
Okay. Well, other question I have is about irises. I bought some irises in a pot over the weekend because they were on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady told me to plant each one, separate the ball, and plant each one 5 to 6 inches deep. But I thought irises were supposed to stay near the surface of the soil, not all the way down in the soil like that.
Are they bearded irises?
Yeah, she said they were, yeah.
They're bearded irises. No, normally the rhizome's like right at the top surface, and generally we don't say more than an inch and a half or so.
Yeah.
So I don't know unless it's some other kind of iris, you know, there's certainly Siberians and some of those.
Well, she said because it was this late in the season, I should put them down deep in the soil. So I didn't know. They're still in the pot. I haven't done anything with them yet.
Yeah, I would be surprised by that because usually they're one of our problems with iris is that sometimes they can actually rot. So that's one of the reasons why they're kind of at the top surface because they dry out faster and all that good stuff. So I think that would be my concern that they might rot if they're that deep.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, I'll go with inch and a half and see what happens.
That I know works.
Okay.
I don't know about the other one. I mean, you could try it, but
okay.
Okay.
You.
Good luck.
Good luck. Well, next is Gibson City, line number 1. Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have a question kind of in the same word as the last caller, and is that my son built me a pergola, and I bought these bulbs. And I know you're supposed to plant them in the spring. Well, they're clematis, sedum, and peony, and gladiolas. And I wonder, is it too late to plant them this year, or when would be a good time to plant them?
I think I would go ahead and plant them at this point. Either that or put them in pots or something. Do they still look okay?
Well, yeah, the bulbs, I mean, they're all in their package. And, you know, I haven't done anything with them because it didn't get done when when I thought they were supposed to be done, or the pergola. So, but do you think pots would probably be the best?
Well, the one thing with pots is that you can control the you can put them in one spot and you can sort of control the watering a little bit better. You have to water them a little bit more often. So it kind of depends on, if you can. The best thing would just be just to get them in the ground. But beyond that, I would definitely, if you don't have a chance to do that, I'd definitely get them in pots at this point.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And let's see, we'll keep going here. Next, we'll go to someone in Urbana, line 3.
Hi.
Hi.
I have some raspberries that a friend wants a couple plants of. Is this a good time to do that, or should we wait till fall?
Raspberries are another one of those that's pretty tough. They take a lot of abuse. You could probably get away with it this year, right now, if you wanted to do it. Might be a little bit better if it was a little bit cooler and you wouldn't have to worry about watering them quite so much. So it'd be better if you could wait till like September or next spring or something like that. But I really think if there's any way she has a chance to water them periodically, I think they'd still live.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We have a couple of minutes left. Maybe we get at least one more person in here. And yeah, we'll do that. And so you want to make a quick plug here?
Yeah, I just want to say I'm doing a program today and also Thursday night on Good Bugs, Bad Bugs. And it's I call it GSI, Garden Scene Investigation. You like that? It's going to be fun. It's at our Champaign County Extension office, or actually, if you're near any of the other Extension offices, it's over the Telenet system, and you might be able to do it at your local Extension office. So 1 o'clock today, and I repeat it at 7 o'clock Thursday night. It'll be fun.
All right. Let's see. We'll get at least one call here. Urbana, line 1. Hello.
Yes. One quick question, and that is it too late to separate hosta?
I would either wait until, I keep saying wait until September, but it's tough when it's this hot and this dry. It's really tough on plants. So I would either wait until September, I'd wait and do it next spring.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, all right, and line number 2, this is Champaign. Hello. They're calling there, line 2 in Champaign.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I have a problem with zucchini. Mm-hmm. I call it sudden death syndrome. just for no reason, they start turning pale and die. And this has happened in previous years. I've got one plant that's doing that now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'll hang up so I can hear you better on the radio.
Yeah. It'd be one of those things you may want to take a sample to your local extension office. I have a feeling you've got squash borer. That would be the other thing that I would look for. And they actually get inside the stem. And you're right. It just basically, it's like the whole plant just dies. So that would be the one thing I would look for in that. And you might, if the stem does die, I would just cut it open and see, because the borer, little caterpillar guy, is actually inside the stem. And that's why they end up dying. So I'd do a little investigation that way. About the only thing we can do is sort of prevent that through pesticide sprays, things like 7 and some of those early in the season to make sure that you don't get them. Because unfortunately, once they get inside there, it's very difficult to control them at that point. So,
And that's
tough problem.
You mentioned that's good that we do hear troubleshooting on the program, but some cases it's hard to do that without seeing the plant. And people certainly can bring in a sample of the plant and can stop by your office, or depending on where they live, at whoever their local extension person is, and they will help them out. They'll figure out what it is, and then give them the best advice they can on what to do with it.
And the University of Illinois has a plant clinic. Purdue has a plant clinic, and so you can certainly check those out as well. A lot of times they can take samples if you mail them in.
Okay. So. Well, we'll see if we can get one more at least. We have a caller in Casey, line 3. Hello.
Hello, this is Julie, and just a message to the lady with the white hydrangea, or as I call them, snowball bushes. When they start to turn green like that, just put them in a pretty green vase. Bring out the green.
I like that. That's sort of like making lemonade out of lemons. That's,
yeah,
I like that.
Or a brown vase when they start to turn a little brown, and just enjoy every stage.
Good for you. Good for you.
That's what I do.
Good idea. Excellent. I like that.
That's good. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Well, maybe we can try one more here. Champagne. Hello. To caller in line one. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, hi. We've just spent a whole bunch of time putting a new flower garden in the front of our house.
Hmm.
And it's turned out really, really well. And we have done all of this because the bed used to have a ton of creeping Charlie in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we dug all this topsoil up and got rid of a whole bunch of it. And to my chagrin, I'm seeing little creeping Charlie leaves creeping back up through the mulch.
Hmm.
Is there anything I can... And we've tried to pull them out and you can't get them.
I know. Mm-hmm.
No end of it. What can I put on those little things to kill them?
I think one of your best bets would be at this point is that if you can get Roundup or one of the non-selective herbicides, and what you want to do is you'll just actually just paint it on the leaves, just very carefully paint on leaves. And as long as you don't get any of the spray on anything you want to keep, with a new flower bed, generally there's enough room there where you can go ahead and do that. Make sure it's not a windy day and all those kind of good things. And after a rain would be a good time. The plants will take it in. And that will hopefully kill off the roots then, which is what one of your problems is, obviously.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
good luck.
You.
Yeah,
thank
just
you
be
very
real
much.
Careful
yeah.
with that stuff.
How frustrating.
Oh, yes. Bye.
Well, thanks for the call. Well, I think that that's be about it. Any last thing that you want to mention?
You know, I just want to mention, I saw on PBS last night was Guns, Germs, and Steel. Excellent, excellent program. If people get, there's two more segments, and I know you didn't ask me to do this, but there's two more segments on Monday nights. But the reason I bring that up is that a lot of it has to do with farming and agriculture. And so mm-hmm. if people have gardening interests and all those kind of things, I think they'll find some of this quite fascinating. It's an excellent book and now an excellent program.
It was based on a very good book, got a lot of positive attention, sold very well. Jared Diamond, we talked about the book here on this very show. I actually got a chance to meet him a couple of years ago when he was here. So it is really interesting. So if people can catch the show, but of course then if you really want to read that book, either you can, I'm sure it's in paperback by now, you could buy a copy, go to the library, whatever. It's very interesting reading.
Okay.
Well, thank you very
much. Thank you.
Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month here, always on the third, it is the third, isn't it? Third Tuesday? Is that when we do this?
Second
Tuesday? It's on one of the Tuesdays.
I think it's the second Tuesday.
Stay tuned. She's here and we take these questions. The support for the show comes from the Infant Parent Institute with offices in Champaign. The Infant Parent Institute is a private clinical practice and research institute dedicated to supporting the mental health of young children and their families. Information on the web at infantparent.com. Programs also made possible by grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design gemstone roundtables, conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada. In the next hour, Rich Warren will be here. We'll talk about consumer electronics. First, though, we'll break for news and a market update.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation.